impose control on the child, to protect the child from the dangers on the street. And in fact, there are dangers for children on the street, and they're very serious, begin to be more and more exaggerated. Solution of detaining children for runaway behavior alone simply exaggerates that kind of struggle. Last year, I was challenged often as I testified against this bill to suggest an alternative. Well, if you don't like this or you think it's too expensive, what else is the department going to do? Because in fact, this is an area of departmental responsibility. One, quite honestly, think we've been seriously underfunded for, so we share our inability to have solved this problem with the legislature and the people of this state. The Covenant House solution and the concepts embodied in the Senate Bill 79 substitute effectively present one solution to the child who has gotten to 10 or 11 or 12 or 13 or adolescence and has begun to run, first time or chronically, or has been cast away, by providing a sanctuary, providing a place that children and their families can contact, for the child a place to go and be safe in a controlled and structured environment, for the parents a place that the parent can be assured that the child is safe, is not being allowed to run wild, to run rampant, to be abused or exploited, so that the parent's anxiety about the safety of their child can be reduced. And over time, for those children who are not being abused, those children who are not being cast away, that the family reunification can occur. And for some of those who are in the latter, in those categories I mentioned of abused or castaway children, that those issues can be adequately identified, the child given the kinds of services the child needs to resolve those feelings so they don't persist in the symptomatic behaviors of stealing, of prostitution, of drug use, of alcohol use, all of which are highly correlated with those things. So those issues can be resolved, and so the parent can be assisted, when possible, to work through whatever issues led to that abuse or that led to saying this child can't come home, and some of those kids even will be reunited. For those who can't be, perhaps some portion of that parent-child relationship can be salvaged. Often it can. As the child gets into later adolescence, they learn to live with their parents' limitations, as we all have learned to live with ours, and hope our children will learn to live with our inadequacies, however minor or severe they may be. We have to look, I think, at those kinds of solutions. When 75% of the runaways, as Paul Wasserman identified, are first and second time runaways, we have to look to the programs that address their needs as early as possible before they join that smaller percentage of the chronic runaways and the castaways. Those kids present a very different problem to us, and so we have to look to that early time. That's the cost-effective approach that we can take. The Senate Bill 79 substitute really embodies an empowerment of agencies to provide those kinds of services, and as such, I endorse it and believe that it can be supported. We also, as this committee probably knows, proposed to the governor an increment. We don't know if it will be funded, if it can be funded in light of the revenue projections, but we have proposed an increment to the governor for Anchorage, for a new unit that would be devoted entirely to working with the children and families where runaway behavior is the presenting problem. A unit comprised not only of social workers, but also probation officers, since many of these youth have committed their minor or serious crimes, and diversion and focus on their own responsibility for their behavior, even when on the run, is an important component of the response we need to provide, as well as a mental health clinician for better assessment of these kids, would be available. That, combined with additional support for other shelter programs in the community, and we hope what would be a matching commitment from the municipality of Anchorage to the block grant funds for enhanced counseling services for runaways, we think, combined with the commitment of Covenant House, would provide a dramatic increase in the available services in response to runaways throughout the state. I can't resist, as well, making a plug, picking up on the comments that Mrs. Beebe made, for real, truly early intervention services in our increments as well, and the things that we hope the governor may be able to fund was a very small increment for prenatal services. That's the first piece that provides good services to moms before a child, and women who are at high risk before the child's ever born. The next piece, and the one that we've known, again, from the early 70s, it's worked in other countries, it has worked in this country in pilot projects, it can work in the state. The concept of health visitors, of early identification, funding of public health to an extent that every family has followed. Not because they're identified as having a problem necessarily, but every new family, the new child, gets some follow-up and is given assistance to enhance their parenting abilities, to recognize the special needs of their child, because within every family, each child is so unique. It's not surprising to hear one child is having a serious problem while the others seem to be okay. That may be the child's problem, it may be an interactional problem, it may be something special about that person. Each of us sort of values our uniqueness, and for those of us who are parents, most of us recognize it began in the womb, certainly did with my two. From those kinds of health visitor programs, we can help parents recognize their own problems, provide them the professional assistance they need to recognize problems and get services early on. Create a norm that it's okay to recognize that you or your child may have a problem, and to begin doing something about it, and to recognize that these problems are rarely isolated in the child, that whether they result from some parental behavior or the parental behavior begins to respond to the child, that both parent and child may need to change the way they are or behave and may need assistance for this problem to be solved. From those kinds of programs, we can truly begin to prevent runaways. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. We do have Greg Wilkin from the Covenant House staff in New York City standing by on the teleconference line, but before we get into the heart of the legislation that's before us, I'd like to ask Jim Nordland to join us at the table. Committee members have in their packets a copy of Senator Rody's bill, as well as a proposed committee substitute and a sectional analysis of the legislation. So I'm going to ask Jim to walk the committee through. Commissioner, if you can just stay there at the table with us. I'll ask Jim to walk us through just compare and contrast the legislation that's before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Each of you should have a sectional analysis, and there are sectional analyses available back there in the audience. Sectional analysis is pretty succinct, does a fairly good job of analyzing the bill. And I will be brief because there are people here better qualified to really respond to various provisions of the bill. But basically what we did, and there's two sections to the substitute that our committee has offered as a draft. The first section is borrowed entirely from Senator Rody's version of the bill that came over to us from the Senate, with the exception on the first page of line 29, which is an additional sentence added to the existing law that would allow the department to permit and license, if you will, runaway kinds of programs like Covenant House, as well as other runaway programs that we might dream up in the future to meet the needs. Section 2, Section 1 is entirely from Senator Rody, Section 1 as it came from the Senate. Section 2, then, is all new material, and that is, again, the only other section of the bill. What we tried to do here is add to the body of law in the state of Alaska a comprehensive approach to the runaway problem. Now, this is a recommendation that has been made by the Mayor's Runaway Task Force, and I'll tell you, it'll probably be a recommendation that'll come out of the Children and Youth Commission. In looking about the country, it's pretty much the standard opinion that New York's legislation is model legislation in the country. So simply what we did is we took New York's law, I gave it to Ed Hine in Legal Services and said, Alaskanize New York's law. So actually at this point I'd like either Ed Hine is online in Juneau, and he can comment more specifically on the various provisions of the bill. And also Greg Loken from Covenant House in New York City is online. And Greg did work on the original version of the New York legislation. So as far as the provisions of Section 2, I'd like to have those folks, along with Commissioner Munson, make comments.
Jim, is it fair to characterize the proposed committee draft just with working on this? It's what we've attempted to do, I think, here is to take the best of Senator Rohde's bill, which is an approach toward statutory changes and tightening up of the law to deal with the problem, and then also incorporate the New York language that will allow the operation of different kinds of treatment programs for youth and their families, and to allow the department the ability to license those kinds of facilities and further define the role in establishment of programs. That's my conception of the proposed committee substitute that's before us. So let me ask if Ed Hein has any comments about what he had to do to Alaskanize the New York law. Ed, are you with us? He may be out of the room. Let's go to Greg Loken then in New York City for any comments that he'd like to make about the Senate bill and the proposed committee substitute.
And it's really a privilege to be with you all today. I just had a couple of days to look at each of these versions of the bill. I must say that I'm extremely impressed by the work you've been doing over the last month, particularly with the new committee. I guess New York's Model Act may not seem like such a Model Act anymore, because I think that the Section 2 of this proposed law would actually be a better written and even more rational approach toward establishing a basis for runaway centers. What the Dort Act tried to do was create a rational state structure for operating crisis services for kids on the street. And that's not so easy to do because, of course, when Father Bruce Ritter began his work in New York City, when Huckleberry House began in San Francisco, when runaway providers were working on this problem all across the country, there was clearly a crack in the social service system that particularly teenage kids were falling through. They couldn't qualify necessarily for abuse and neglect services, and they had not many of them committed crimes and were not full of the juvenile justice system. And there really was very little in the way of services for them. It was also clear that the state programs that tried to deal with these often failed, as the kids were running away in droves, even from some of the best state programs that existed. So around the country, there began to grow up a private movement to help runaway homeless kids. The New York law in 1978 addressed this issue directly by establishing a means of approving and licensing these programs and giving them some room for operation to address this problem. The New York Act has been amended to raise the age of services allowed to age 21, which everyone recognized after 8 or 9 years of work was most appropriate, because older teenagers have very severe problems on the street as well. So now in New York, we have a system that allows us to provide crisis services to kids under the age of 21 and to work hard and quickly to get them home with their parents as best possible. It also mandates us to report any suspected child abuse to state authorities. It requires that we provide sanctuary to these kids in the sense that you don't have to worry about their names being revealed in public. The records that we keep are confidential, and the kids know they can come here for help without risking public exposure. Because, of course, we're dealing with kids who've been heavily involved in prostitution, drug abuse, sometimes criminal activity. That kind of assurance has been particularly important. And what I think the committee substitute does in Section 2 is take all the best elements of the New York law and write them in a more direct and logical form. I'm extremely impressed with the way this has been written, and course, and hope the committee can see its way clear to passing it later, and I hope the legislature will seriously consider it. Sitting in New York, I grew up in Colorado, so I have a little bit of the Westerner in problem for the police to address. It takes a lot of time, a lot of effort. It's an extremely difficult thing for a police officer to deal with a troubled kid on the street. What we found in New York, since the Runaway Youth Act was passed in 1978, is that the police have enthusiastically endorsed it. They, in New York City, we now have a runaway squad that I think the pride of the country. Was on 6 minutes recently. It's an excellent operation. They operate very independently of Covenant House and other runaway programs, but they use us all the time for kids that they need a place for the night. And the police are more enthusiastically involved in handling the runaway problem because they have some alternatives. Difficulty with the old system in New York City was that the police were made a horrible choice between allowing a child to be on the street or putting them in jail or putting them into a program that the child has probably already run from once before or the police don't have a lot of confidence in. So this proposal and New York law, which preceded it, gives everybody, I think, something to work with and encourage above all private individual private groups to get involved and to solve this problem without using a lot of government resources. And the Runaway Network around the country has been one of the most successful private voluntary movements over the last 15 years. I'm very open to questions that they may have about particular provisions, and I think it may be that as you work through individual sentences, etc., we may find small technical problems, but again, overall, I'm very enthusiastic about the draft that you all sent me.
Great, thank you very much. Can you, for the record, tell us your exact position there on the
Covenant
House staff?
I got a little ahead of myself. I don't use that, but myself, my own office. I'm the executive director of the Institute for Youth Advocacy, which is the part of the Covenant House efforts that Jim Calderola understandably didn't get around to talking about. I work for to represent kids in court, I need legal representation. I fight for legislation on their behalf and have worked extensively in the area of sexual exploitation of kids, working for passage of the Child Protection Act federal level. And what my job here is to try to keep track of what's happening to these kids on an everyday level, on a national scene, and try to keep Covenant House informed about it. And I do a better job of that some days than others, I can tell you.
Greg, thank you for being with us. Are there any questions from the committee members to Mr. Loken or to Ed Hine, the drafter? Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm passing on a question for Senator Rohde. Greg, Senator Rohde was wondering if under the current statute in New York, if there's the ability to detain youth.
In New York, police are allowed to briefly detain kids, and what they can do is pick them up, very much as I understand this bill of the structure, they can pick them up and hold on to them long enough to find out who their parent is and to try to make some kind of a resolution of their problem. And that usually is only several hours at the most, once in a while overnight, but not in a detention facility. So the police do have the ability to get kids off the street, but then they try to get them back home quickly or into a runaway shelter or another sort of social service program. I must say, though, that the draft bill that you have here gives the police, I think, much clearer direction and will make it that much easier for them to handle these kinds of cases than what we have in New York.
Representative Hudson?
Yes, Greg, hitting back on a question that you probably didn't hear earlier, and that is the availability of a well-publicized, centralized toll-free number or some sort of a quick directory reference to the services available, first of all, to the parents who are searching for a runaway, and second of all, to the children who are searching for aid. Do you have a centralized, well-publicized toll-free number or other kind of directory reference for this kind of service in New York?
We sure do. Of course, we've recently opened the 9 line, which you all may have heard about a little bit earlier. But serves that purpose well on a national level. In New York, of course, we get, and in our other sites where we actually have programs, we have parents actually calling the program itself. And I think we're often able to do a lot just in terms of talking to parents over the phone and giving them referrals from our program site. And of course, if a parent is looking for a missing child, a runaway child, or a homeless child, many of them will call our program because they are, in every case, the largest program in whatever city they're in, at least so far. That's generally a very good place for a parent to start in terms of looking for a child. And we will, of course, tell parents whether their child is in the program once we are sure that we're talking to a parent and that the child also will not be injured by discussing the case with the parent.
Thank you. Any further questions? If not, I'd like to give Commissioner Munson and Senator Rohde, if you'd like to take it, an opportunity to comment on the legislation specifically, the various options before us. So, Commissioner?
Thank you. As was pointed out, the bills are identical in Section 1. I think it's important to note that something has been retained in the substitute that was added to the current law in Section 1 in 4710.141 subsection B that I think has implications that the committee should consider carefully and the department opposed last year and will continue to oppose this year. This provides in new provisions that a peace officer honors the minor's preference to return the child home and then provides other options where the child can be taken, but limits the return of the minor to the parent, legal custodian, only to those situations where the legal custodian consents to the return of the child, and also provides that the peace officer may be required by the legal custodian to take the minor to some nearby location designated by the legal custodian. Neither of those provisions seem to me to further good policy. That in the first of them, in both of them, where the parent can require the peace officer can basically say, even though my child wants to come home, I'm not going to let them come home. Or I want you to take the child, I'm not going to let the child come home, I want you to take the child to get this third place, and provides no mechanism for ensuring that that's an appropriate place, that the child is willing to be there, that the services the child and the family may need are going to be available there, and so on. Does not seem to me to accomplish what we need. If the parent wishes to say, I can't meet the needs of this child, or this child is so disruptive to my family, when the child is wanting to return home, it seems to me most appropriate that the parent exercise the authority the parent already has and arrange an alternate placement for the child themselves, either by, if Covenant House were to be available here, contacting Covenant House, Alaska Parent Youth Foundation, the other program working with Runaways in Anchorage and Fairbanks Family Focus, or Division of Family and Youth Services, which in fact is responsible for caring for children whose parents refuse to provide care to them. Now, that refusal to provide care does not imply necessarily fault on the part of the parent. It may be an entirely appropriate decision that can't meet the child's need. But I believe at the point at which a parent is refusing to meet their parental responsibility to care for the child, whether for good reasons or simply because they've had it with this kid and maybe had had it with that child long before, they ought to work through an agency or a program that is, we can have some assurance, is able to meet the needs of the child in those circumstances, and that the broker of that should not have to be the police officer.
Okay. Senator Rohde, could you join us? I had a question for you about that.
Let me respond by saying,
okay,
that
please.
The child could be placed in a home or facility that has proven.
Excuse me, Joe, I've lost transmission.
That a child could be placed in a facility that is approved by the parent that is retained in Section 1 of the. Of the HES substitute, and there is a good reason for parents not wanting the child to come back. For example, if the child is abusing drugs severely, is a danger to the other siblings, or a danger to themselves, and should be in a facility, they shouldn't be at home, and the parent is making the right decision, regardless of what the department says. And we need to have the options available for the right decision to be made for the child. And we've been through this a lot. I'm firmly convinced that having several options for the child, because there will be cases in which the child will be a danger to him or herself, to him or her, his or her parents, his or her siblings. And again, the best interest of the child is what we're trying to promote here. And I think that does it. Secondly, let me give credit where credit is due with regard to the Covenant House appropriation. If it hadn't been for Judy Rich and for Ann Plunkett, I don't think that would be. And I put it in the budget, as you know, we do how we do things in the Senate. But the real credit goes to them. I think it's a great program, but all the work was done there, and I can take a little bit of credit. Secondly, with regard to the detention question that was talked about earlier, the commissioner and I have debated that at great length. Let me say that the system that we have now isn't working, period. Nobody disagrees with that. And the ability to detain a very limited number of people who are a danger to themselves or society should be there. I'm an attorney. I understand the legal implications. I've also grown up here, and I hope I have some understanding of what happens on the streets. And for those very few people, again, who may be a danger to themselves or to society or to other children, there should be a narrow and constitutional ability to detain those people, much in the same way that we are encouraging the wonderful work that Covenant House does, because it provides for the safety of runaways. And that's why I incorporated in my original bill. That's why I still maintain that it is, an important fact. The existing state of affairs is that no one has control over a child if he or she, at whatever age, does not want to go home or do anything. That is unacceptable to me, morally, ethically, and as a matter of public policy, and I think unacceptable to most Alaskan parents.
I have two questions for you on the language that we've retained in the proposed substitute. When the child who comes into custody, the police says that the child says he or she wants to return home, and so the police call up the parents or take the child to the home, and the parents say, no, we won't allow the child back in the house for whatever reason. At that point, when the parents, under this legislation, if this were to pass in its current form, would that child then be a ward of the state? I mean, in what sense are parents giving custody of that child to the state by saying that child is not allowed back into our house? The state, you are responsible for that child at this point. Is that what they're saying under those circumstances? And does the child come into custody of the state? So that's the question there, the practical effect of the bill. And then also, because I can agree with you, there's circumstances where it would not be in the best interest of that family for the child to come back to that household. The language here that says, take the minor to a nearby location designated by the legal custodian. So the police officer and the child and the parents are standing there on the doorstep, and they say, we're not allowing the child back into our house because of some compelling reason. So the police officer says, where would you like to take us to take the child? And the parent says, well, take him to his aunt and uncle's house. And the child, may not say anything at that point. And the parents have made arrangements with the aunt and uncle for the child to go there. And the child immediately runs away because the child doesn't plan to be there. The aunt and uncle can't exert any more physical control over the child than the parents have in the past. So I'm wondering what the thought is about nearby location. Is the word nearby there so that the state will not incur major costs by transporting a child to some other city or some other state to be with some relative? Is that why you've limited the location?
Yes, it as a matter of practicality, we're trying to develop a reasonable approach to a very complex problem and a lot of different problems, and obviously it would be impractical to require the police to transport a child from Anchorage to Tow. With regard to your earlier question, with regard to the legal impact of the first section of the bill, it is not my intent, nor do I think certainly in the short run that this puts the custodianship of the child in the state. I think after a period of time, that certainly is a question. If the child is in a facility for a significant length of time, I think that becomes a very real question.
But the Representative Ellis, this is Ed Hine in Juneau. I'm available to address any questions you may have on the specifics of the bill or the drafting considerations. I've listened to all the testimony up to this point, and I do have a couple of comments to make.
Okay, thank you, Ed. Representative Coburn?
Yes, I have a question. I pose both of the Senator and also maybe Ed might have some comments. The same section that Representative Ellis refers to, take the minor to a nearby location designated by the legal custodian. Is this tight enough? Because I can see there might be some, you know, depending on the parent, we do have a certain number of 4,000 where the nearby location may not be to the interest of the child or the state or for that matter of the family. Within the last 2 weeks, a mother was convicted of a charge in connection, this is outside in back east, where her daughter committed suicide because she had been forced by her mother to take part in pornographic activities and to dance nude, the mother using the income that was derived from the exploitation of her daughter. The daughter committed suicide as a result. In the bare statement here, if you had such a mother, she could make the policeman take that girl back to that nightclub.
May I respond?
Sure, go ahead, Judy. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Judy Rich, and I am wearing several hats. I did facilitate coordinate one of the local tough love groups until last week, and now Peggy Stewart is our new coordinator. I'm also have been a rape crisis counselor with STAR for the last 4 or 5 years, and I sit on the Governor's Interim Commission on Children and Youth. Senate Bill 79, as you know, is close to my heart, and I would like to address the question on the floor about what happens to a child whose parent is refusing to take the child home. Is the child now in state custody? The reason for the nearby location was because of Mrs. Munson's testimony last year. She said, well, what if a kid says he wants to go to Hawaii? Are we required to take him to Hawaii? And so it came directly out of her testimony that was put in. But the purpose of that is that the child, in my view, would not be in state custody at that point. We need a broad range of options for everybody when you get into a crisis situation. And one option is that the child can go home. You'll notice that the language of the bill is the child's preference will be honored. Mrs. Munson pointed out last year when we started saying she didn't want the part in about a parent could refuse to take a child because she said that's already in the law. That's fine. If it's already in the law, it doesn't hurt to duplicate that. But I like this bill because it sets out everything dealing with runaways. Parents who want to be handed a copy of the bill don't have to be handed a copy of Alaska statutes to find what they need. They can go to one section to find it. But one of the things that often happens, and we've got several parents in our group in this position, child runs, okay, all of a sudden now you realize the crisis is worse than you thought. You try to bring the child, or the police officer tries to bring the child home, you literally cannot have the child in your home, but you do have a relative or a family friend who is willing to take that child and with whom that child feels safe. There's no guarantee the child is going to stay there, that's correct. but at least it's a beginning point of negotiation that's open for both the parent and child. And I don't think it hurts a police officer to stand there and try to facilitate that discussion just a little bit. They certainly do it in domestic violence disputes. They certainly do it in other areas. I think we can train our officers to understand some of the dynamics of runaways and what's going to happen when they take them home, and that this here is a possible solution. I think most police officers would be grateful not to have to make a decision to either the parents can't take this child or I have to place him in the custody of the state, which involves a whole nother 5 or 6 hours of his time. I think most police officers would be grateful if there was a friend or a relative that both child and parent agreed to that they could go to without involving the state for a few days while the parents work it out.
Okay. Before Representative Phelps, do you, on that question that Representative Kopanen raised, do you think there, is that your question too?
Yeah, but how do you prevent something? How do you prevent something from that happening? I believe the case was in Florida. Obviously, you know, we have a responsibility to make a law that try to cover almost every, of course we can't do that, but we have to find, you know, certain areas where we have to cover it. Cover something like that.
So is the language explicit enough in that?
May I answer first? There's the language with regard to child's preference. Secondly, there's a whole other body of law that we don't have before us, regarding child abuse that would come into play, and regarding criminal conduct that we don't have before us. So long as there was some knowledge, obviously. If nobody knew anything, we could. It would be impossible to do anything under any circumstances. I think we would all agree with that. If there was any evidence or comments sufficient to alert the officer to a problem, and the child made comments, without this, there would be in Alaska sufficient evidence to. Resolve the matter, certainly in the short term, and not force that child back into an undesirable situation.
Perhaps just the adjective state before location, which, as Judy says, that one of the advantages of this is putting it all in one statute, and, you know, if we still have to refer to another statute, maybe the word state would be enough. I'm not sure if it's another legal draft.
One of the things, it says take the minor to a nearby location. I would prefer to see agreed to by the child and legal custodian as part of the wording, even though at the top it says the peace officer shall honor the minor's preference to either return the minor to the legal guardian if the legal guardian consents to the return, and then have the next part read take the minor to a nearby location agreed to by the child and legal custodian.
Representative Ellis. Can I make a comment? This is Ed Hines, you know.
Yes, please go ahead, Ed.
One thing about this section is, as Judy has pointed out, it's worded entirely from the point of view that the minor has the choice of where to be taken. There is, I think, an underlying assumption in this language that each of the options that the child is given is intended to be a safe option. And while it doesn't say so specifically, and if you feel that it needs clarification, we can do that, I think there is an underlying assumption here that all of these or any of these are going to be safe options. Now, admittedly, there may be cases where the returning the minor to the parent or legal custodian would not be a safe condition for the child. I think there's a presumption here that either the child or the police officer will recognize that, and therefore the child will not be going back there. However, that's not stated in the statute. But the language was drafted to leave it up to the minor as to where he or she should be taken. And, of course, I think that you could also infer that the peace officer is under an affirmative duty not to leave the child somewhere where the child would be in danger in the policeman's estimation. Of course, also, the statute no provision here for holding on to the child after he's delivered to any of these places. It simply creates a duty on the part of the peace officer to pick up the child, take the child to one of the locations that the child chooses. Presumably, if the child is uncooperative, doesn't want to go to any of the locations, then the peace officer will take the child to the department or whatever location is available. But there is, it seems to me, this affirmative duty on the part of the police officer to make sure that as long as the child is in the police officer's protective custody, as we say in the bill, that the police officer is not going to leave the child somewhere where in the police's judgment it's not safe for the child.
Okay, thank you, Ed. Judy?
I want to respond further to Representative Phillips. There is no law that's going to deal effectively with every child or every parent. I think that we need to operate from the perspective that the parents of the state are best, are most knowledgeable about children, that we have to provide them with the best possible options to raise their children. The department brings a different perspective. They are a dispassionate voice for children. They see children against a broad background of lots of children and lots of parents, and children need that kind of advocacy. And parents do too. But children also need a 24-hour passionate advocacy, and that's what parents are there for. And in providing a law to help some children in the state, we absolutely cannot hamstring appropriate parents. We can't undercut them. And we may disagree what undercutting them is. My biggest fear in this is that we always have children who will unfairly cry abuse because they've been forced to do so to manipulate the system that doesn't work for them. And we have children who are abused and who will not say so because they do not understand that in saying so, the mechanism of the state will go into play that will keep them safe or attempt will really make an effort to keep them safe. You can't cover those kinds of people. It's just, that's a very difficult choice.
What I'd like to do, we're running out of time here this morning, and I just refuse to move on much more with this without taking some more testimony from the public. So could you all hold your questions, please, for the work session and on the legislation, and we'll try and let everyone have their say. Is Michael Lindsay still with us? Would you come on up and join us, sir? And following that, we'll take Ronald Brown and then Pudge Klinkoff. You could just state your name again for the record. Go ahead.
Is it on?
Okay.
My name is Mike Lindsay, and I'd just like to state that I risk the possibility of walking home this morning just so I could stay for the rest of the session. And I'd like to say that I've listened to a lot of good testimony here this morning, and I've heard a lot of discouraging testimony too, in the fact that there isn't a whole lot of support here for the parents, except for what I've heard in the last few minutes. And like my wife said earlier, we're in a crisis situation with our daughter. She's on the run, or she was on the run, and she's in state custody now. And we would like to bring her back home. But she has figured out how to work the system and figured out how to manipulate her probation officer and the social workers and everybody else. And it hasn't helped our situation at all. She's been in state custody now for 2 months, and she hasn't had any psychological evaluation or counseling in the 2 months she's been in custody. And it seems to me that it's wasting our time, it's wasting the state's money, and I think we need to move a little faster with this, because they talk about us getting back together as a family. And it's, and it didn't work this time. Luckily, the police department saw it, and She couldn't even identify what abuse was, but she, it's on her record now that she lied to the police department about the child abuse and the physical abuse. And she, the night she ran away, on this last string of runaways, she challenged me because she had broke the rules in the house. She challenged me that if I punished her or spanked her or anything, that she would call the child abuse agency. And I challenged her. I said, you go right ahead and then come down here and watch. But I didn't do anything. And then she went ahead and ran anyway. So, you know, you can still make a child happy and not do anything, or you can punish them and they still run. It's touchy right there. I mean, she just, in our case, she just needed an excuse to run. She wasn't happy at home and she didn't want to live there, and she still doesn't. So,
yeah. Are there any other questions of Mr. Lindsay?
Representative Phillips, in your particular case, she's in McLaughlin because she has committed some misdemeanors.
Yeah, she.
And not because of run.
She committed some felonies.
Felonies?
Yeah, she burglarized the house, and her and some other kids, they stole the car and drove it from Eagle River to here, and they wrecked it. I don't know how much damage was done to it, but I guess quite a bit. But she broke probation. That's why she's back in McLaughlin. And it was only 3 weeks from the time that she was in front of Judge Hitchcock till the time she was back in front of him again. And he told her, she came in front of him again, but then, or broke probation, she was going to get it. And I'm just glad that she, pardon me?
Is she 16?
No, she's 15. 15. And we've been having trouble with her for about 3 or 4 years. We tried to get counseling for her, and well, like my wife said, nobody listened. And I even had problems psychologically, and I put myself in Charter Hospital for 3 weeks because I knew that I needed the help, and still nothing's been done for her, and she's out there committing the crimes, and, you know, I'm just trying to raise a family. That's all I'm trying to do.
Is that what you think would help her, Mr. Lindsay, is some sort of intensive psychological therapy or counseling?
In her case, yes. I'm not saying that all kids would work.
And so the judge has ordered that in McLaughlin, but she has yet to receive those services?
Yeah, I guess it takes a few days to write the order up and whatever it takes. He had ordered her to get counseling, but the probation officer was waiting for her to get into her full-time foster home. And she was in an interim foster home, and she knew she was going to be in it. But when she got put in her full-time foster home, it made her mad because she liked where she was at. She had a little bit of freedom there than what we agreed that she should have. And so when she got into her full-time foster home, she spent the night there and then went to school the next day and then took off again. And she had planned it. She was going to do that. She knew the night she went over there that she was going to do that.
Representative Phillips?
Okay, she's in McLaughlin right now today, right?
Yes.
Have you talked to the people there as far as what kind of program she's going through in detail with them, or did they say, we got a program that's that?
As of yet, I haven't gotten very good cooperation out of McLaughlin. They keep telling me that I have to go through the probation officer to find out anything. Every time she has a blood test done for drugs or something like that, they say, we don't have the information. You have to get it from a probation officer. And I think that's where our rights have been violated, too. Because as a parent, I think I should be able to get that from McLaughlin.
I think that might be a separate issue. I asked
I don't know.
Here we got a program 1, 2, and 3. We think your daughter ought to be in program 1. Here's what program 1 is all about. Did they explain that to you yet?
No.
Or is it because it's been so recent that she's in there, they haven't finished their evaluation of her yet in order to put her in a program?
I don't know if they're going to come to us. They might just go to the probation officer or the social worker and find out if the program is okay with them. Whatever they decide.
But eventually they have to talk to you.
I don't know that. That's the cooperation I've been getting
no,
so far.
So maybe we gotta look into that.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, we're gonna need to move along. Representative Hudson, last question.
Just a quick question. Have you had any family counseling for your was it your daughter? Your daughter and your wife and yourself have been together with a counselor?
No, every time we go in to get family counseling, the counselors tell us that it's my wife and I that are having a problem, it's not our daughter.
mean you all walk in there together into the room and they say, you have the problem.
They talk. We walk. Leave. We walk in there. Okay. We talk. We tell them what the problem is, and they go and have their conference, and then we go back maybe a week later or 2 weeks later, and they tell us it's not your problem, your daughter's problem. It's your wife and your problem. That's what
we
did.
And do they explain it in terms of current events or in terms of what happened early in the family to create these behaviors in the daughter, mixing with her own psychological?
They go back to. They go back. They look over the history of what's happening in our family and what has occurred, and that's what they evaluate their. They come up with. That's how they come up.
Do they ever come up in these sessions with any kinds of ideas to modify the behavior or any kind of positive facilitating of that kind of discussion?
As far as all three of us go, no. I've gotten a lot of help. I'm better. I look better at myself and. I feel better at myself. That's why I'm here, because I feel that by my feeling better about myself, that I know that the problem isn't all with me. And I think that she needs a lot of help right now.
Mr. Lindsay, we appreciate you making the sacrifice to stay with us. I'm glad we got to hear from you.
Thank you.
Could we have Ronald Brown come up and then Coach Kornkopf?
Okay, my name's Ron Brown. I have a similar problem to him. Matter of fact, my daughter was involved in one incident with his daughter. And the fact that they had taken two cars, went joyriding, broke into my sister's house, stole her jewelry, and stole a bunch of stuff out of there, and held back the fact that they had had our child, and they had told us they would let us know immediately when they found her, because we was worried. Anyway, I can speak for a whole bunch of people that I've talked to, and they all have the same similar thing happen. Once you do get to talk to the counselors and stuff, they put the parent up on the stage and say, hey, you got the problem, not the kid. And they've done that, and I can give you 20 people that they've done that to, and a bunch more stuff than that even goes deeper than that. I am really upset with the current system and the way it works. And so are a lot of other people I'm representing right now, too. I got a sister that had a daughter that they took away from her. She ended up doing sexual things for people only 13 years old. She's running away with this black boy. And this black boy that she ran away with is causing a lot of problems, causing her to run away from home, this and that, and then when she's seeing her counselor, you know what her counselor does? Her counselor says, you got a problem, sir. Says, what we're doing is we're giving you a black counselor, and we're going to put your daughter in a black foster home. And they did that, which is wrong. And they later told her, what would you do if your daughter was pregnant and the baby was black? And saying stuff like that, just pushing her aside, knowing she ain't got no money, no job, no nothing. And working with her from the child's standpoint, and the child is immature in the head to begin with, to be doing some of the things she's doing. But they're just working from the child's side and putting the parent up on stand. I got another sister, my sister Vicky. She watched Susie's other kid for over 2 years. Watched that kid, paid for everything, didn't ask for no money because my sister Susie ain't got no money. And took care of that kid. That kid got one spanking during the time she was there. The counselors took that one time that she got spanked and said, child abuse, we're taking her away. At the same time, they're talking to them, talking about making them a parent, deceiving them. And I've seen deceiving, I've seen the Karen put up on the stand, I've heard about it so many times, I'm fed up with it. And so are all these other people. And I'm fed up with the present mob. And everyone is that I talk to. I'm at the standpoint now where, you know, I don't even like associating with them. I don't want to have nothing to do with them. I don't want to have nothing to do with the whole state. I grew up here, I was raised here as a kid, and so was my other four sisters. And this present system that they got now, is making it hard for the parents, and we're getting fed up with it. And you guys don't sit back. You guys sit back with these politics going back and forth about gestures, this and that, but you don't never really do nothing. It's getting worse. We got one of the worst runaway problems in the United States per capita, and nothing is being done. People like her and other people are working from the other side of the fence and ain't looking at the parent at all. And we're getting fed up with it. I'm fed up with it. And so is everyone else I've talked to. I have not seen one parent yet that has dealt with the family social services up here that liked the way they handled it. Not one. And I've talked to quite a few people.
Mr. Brown, what would you suggest we change in the law?
I suggest they make it illegal for runaways to run away. If they got a problem, have them stay in the schools. Here is a central line that you can call in the state of Alaska. You call that line if you got a problem, and we'll work with it. Okay? Don't go put the parent up on the stand every time and put the child safe going away. All it's doing, really, is creating these people jobs and time. They're saying, well, they need time for these jobs. Well, of course, they're going to need more time because you're creating a chain reaction. You got one kid that does it, and the next kid says, well, hey, that's okay. They do it, and they put the parent, wow, man, I'm going to do it too. Well, it's going, just like that. My daughter is run away with this girl here, and then she skipped school after that. She was an honor roll student along with my other two daughters last year. Now she has gone down with four F's and failing in the first semester ever since family services have taken over. And I'm fed up with it. And so is everyone else. And I'm fed up the way I hear people talking in here. I think it's wrong.
Mr. Brown, if we criminalize running away, should a criminal record follow that runaway? I mean, should they be given a criminal record?
They damn sure should. If the parent is right about what they're doing with their children, and there ain't, in fact, anything that the parent is doing wrong with the child, they should have a record. When I was a kid, I run away, I got put in McLaughlin right after it was opened up. And I was still creating problems in school. They kicked me out of school. Right there at the end, you know what my choices were? I was either to stay in reform school until I reached 19 years old, I believe it was at that time, or join the service, and they drop all my records. And that's what happened. This shit here is bullshit. I think it's wrong. I see all the stuff going on is wrong. The goddamn law is wrong. Everything's wrong. I'm fed up with it.
Well, I guess we could disband the committee and not do anything, but that's the reason we're here today is to work on this problem. So we appreciate hearing your comments. Representative Hudson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I think that you've hit upon probably a classic problem. It's a difficult situation to try to filter the difference between those who are innocently charged because the kids know how to manipulate the system and those who are guilty and therefore overwhelming, you know, their child there. And any kind of constructive help that you and anybody else that have experienced this can give us in helping determine how we can solve that problem, you'll just hit upon, I think, probably the major corrective thing that we could do in the legislature here, because this is a classic problem. I know a lot of people just like yourself who believe and are innocent of what they're being charged and really believe that they're the ones who are being held up for the abuse. And I also know circumstances where parents are so absolutely slick that they can continue to abuse this child and get away with it. And what we have to try to find is the way in which to separate the wheat from the chaff there.
Okay.
Any help that you can give us in that respect?
What I say, and what I suggested earlier, and I've thought about it, is all these kids have to go to school. And these kids that are having these problems are in school. So I think they should take and have a open line through the school, and they should publicize it in whatever way, through PE, and let them know they got this number they can call. If they really, in fact, got a problem, they got a committee that they can work with that problem if they do have a problem. But they ain't got a problem, and the law says it's okay for them to run away, and they're just going to keep doing it. And they're going to tell, well, I run away. They're going to tell their friend, and the next friend's going to say, well, I run away, and nothing happened to them. My parent was put up on the stand. Well, why can't they just have a line where they call and say, hey, I got a problem, you know, and if indeed they got a problem, and let them handle it from there.
And if they anonymous. Just,
yeah.
Where they can be
anonymous. Uh-huh.
Mr. Brown, thank you for being with us. Is Sylvia Brown here to testify? And then we'll take Pudge Klinkoff following that.
My name's Sylvia Brown, and I've heard this legislative bill, and I'm for it. I think the parents should have the say if they want their child to whatever, see counseling or whatever. I think the parents should have the say. We're tired of not being listened to. The child has all the rights, and that's wrong. And I like this bill, and I want it passed. That's it.
Thank you very much. Judge Kleinkopf?
Representative Ellis, Representative Copenin, members of the committee, thank you for the invitation to testify. I provided you with a copy of an article which I wrote for the Anchorage Times last spring, and I'm sorry that the Xeroxing didn't include the date in which it appeared in the Times, so you may wish to add that to your copy. It appeared in the Anchorage Times on Saturday, April 25th, 1987. I'm sorry about that. I didn't notice it until after it was Xeroxed. Just a couple of general comments and then some specific comments on the legislation, Mr. Chairman. I think it's fair to say, and I think everyone would agree, that we really don't know all the parameters of the problem. We know there is a problem and a serious problem, but I think in terms of the numbers of runaways on the street, we're only guessing. I think Paul would agree to that as well. We don't have real good data. We also don't have a lot of research yet that shows exactly why kids run away, although I did bring for you, and I'll have staff Xerox for the committee, the results of one major national study that does clearly, for the first time, link runaway behavior to child abuse and neglect. We speculated about that, but again, we've had very little, if any, research data to show that. Generally, I think we all agree as well that the system is inadequate. The system doesn't serve the needs. The system isn't preventive. The system isn't coordinated. The system doesn't address the problem even after the problem has come to the attention of someone. Also, I think that that many of the issues here deal with a couple of different aspects. Since each particular runaway is so individualized, there may be instances in which, there's a child who's very skilled at claiming child abuse, and in that case gets a certain kind of attention from the department. Another child may actually be being abused. Another child may have serious learning problems that have resulted in serious family problems or school problems. The challenge is probably to write a piece of legislation that in some way helps us to deal with the problem in a way that enables the system to do it in an individualized manner so that we aren't treating everyone as though they were abused when they're not, or that we're not claiming that everything is a parent's fault when in many cases it's not. And that's the difficult area. So a couple of comments generally and then about the bill particularly. I have stressed a number of times, both on this with Senator Rohde's bill and on other legislation that's been before the legislature over the last number of years. It was also a major consideration in the Children's Code Task Force that was the forerunner of the current Children's Commission, in which this was a major area of discussion and a major problem area, as Commissioner Munson has indicated. There is already adequate protection in the statutes for dealing with children who have broken the law. What happens here is that many of these children who are runaways have also broken the law. The law provides adequately that those children can be held as delinquent children and institutionalized in McLaughlin. The problem is that in many cases, the police either don't take the time or spend the time or pay attention to the actual laws that the child has broken and proceed to file petitions under the delinquency statutes that would bring those children into the treatment programs at McLaughlin Youth Center. We hear over and over again about The kids that may be engaging in prostitution, the kids that may be engaging in the abuse of drugs, the kids that may be stealing, breaking into houses, whatever it happens to be. And yet, the system seems somehow to want to only look at the fact that that child's a runaway. And somehow to look at that rather than at the crimes the children have committed. And so the police will tell you over and over again that, oh yeah, they know that the kid has been prostituting or abusing drugs or engaging in other criminal behavior, but they tend to want to try to use only the runaway laws to address that kid. Now, it comes down to, as you talk to prosecutors and, you know, other attorneys, often it comes down to the fact that the system doesn't have the time or doesn't want to take the time to actually do what is needing to be done in order to prosecute those kids for the drug abuse, for the prostitution, for the breaking and entering, for the car stealing, whatever it happens to be. The system just doesn't, you know, the prosecutors, they don't want to do that, and it takes too much time, and they don't have the staff or whatever. And so it's easier then to fall back on, oh, this kid is a runaway. What are we going to do about the kid as a runaway? As a matter of fact, I would like to see the state really begin to get some hard data on how many of the kids that are dealt with as runaways are really lawbreakers, and why isn't the state pursuing that aspect of their behavior? See, the state is not prosecuting those kids in many cases. For instance, perhaps the Justice Center at the university would be a very good source of such a study and such information for you. Okay, second is, I want to point out, as I think other people have done here, that overall there's some major gaps in the system. I think you've heard virtually every parent come forward today and tell you in a nutshell that counseling isn't effective, that the solution is not counseling. And yet over and over and over again, you'll see the courts issue orders that the family go to counseling. Counseling doesn't generally work because it isn't concrete, it isn't specific, and it doesn't deal with the kinds of issues often that parents really have to deal with. So, for instance, some of the other answers that are not being addressed in any way across the system is a good comprehensive system of sort of parent-child communication classes, if you will, and I don't want to say counseling, I want to say parent-child communication. That's very different than what most people think of as counseling. Those classes often are to help parents, and I think Tough Love addresses this issue, in appropriate limit setting for their kids. Tough Love works on, to some degree, on that approach. The whole area, which I want to address again in a minute, of emancipation services have not been addressed either, where some kids, you see, the system tries to force kids home, and in many cases, that's not appropriate any longer. The kid is essentially emancipated. The parents may see that. The parents may feel like, you know, they're not a kid that really participates in the family to any great degree. We don't provide any services for that. And the whole other area that you've seen addressed, and this is one I think that's been with us always, and no one quite knows how to solve, because we have local school district services rather than services which can be comprehensively mandated for all schools in the state. The other major problem in all of this is the schools. The school counselors essentially do scheduling, and that's mostly what they do. They don't provide school counseling services. They don't do the kind of or provide the kind of service that they could that might address some of the problems that you've heard addressed earlier, which is sort of where does a kid go in the school system? The school is the one place that could get at most kids. The school district is not enforcing the truancy laws, nor are they, I think, working with the legislature toward more appropriate truancy laws. So we've got a lot of kids running and on the street that the school could have some hand in stopping if they enforce their truancy laws. We also don't have educational services for kids. In the Anchorage School District budget cuts, one of the things that were cut were some of the in-school suspension programs. That was a bad mistake, and many of us testified or called members of the school district and opposed that, in that it makes no sense to simply have the school actually participating in this problem by suspending kids and sending them out on the street, you know, so that then they continue that behavior. They don't go home after school is out, and they just continue as a runaway. So the whole school system in this state does not provide the kind of educational support services that it needs to. I heard one parent particularly mention the SAVE program, which, you know, thank God for the SAVE program, SAVE 1 and 2. It saved more kids than you can name, and yet we don't have nearly enough SAVE programs for all the kids who need them in the state. So those are just a couple of overall comments for you. I'd like to make very brief comments on the bill, and then I'm also available, Representative Ellis, for other questions about the bill. I'd like to see you consider amending the title to include an act relating to runaway, comma, missing, comma, and homeless minors. I think that the legislation alludes to homeless minors, but doesn't really address them. And I think we all know that there are kids on the street who are kids who are shoved out and who are homeless. I'd like to see the legislation specifically relate to that. I would urge the committee perhaps to give some consideration in Section B of Section 1, which begins on line 22, to provide some stronger linkage for the requirement that the peace officer determine if and when the law has been broken, and then proceed immediately to address the options open to them under Title 47 for delinquent minors. In other words, all this does is provide a peace officer to take the child into protective custody and then to see if the child wants to go home. So again, I think this legislation is focusing only on the runaway aspects and not on the other way in which the system provides an ability to get services, which is to get the services of McLaughlin Youth Center and Youth Corrections when the child has actually broken the law, as again, I think many people have addressed. Again, very, very quickly, I too, as you've heard other testimony, strongly support Section 2 that begins with Article 5 on page 2. I think it's a major breakthrough in this state for some progressive legislation. I think we've all agreed that the major issue here is that there are not services available for families and parents and kids. That's been our biggest gap. And I don't think we can address all of the issues here with just legislatively. It has to be a service delivery issue, and I think that's what Section 2 provides, and I think that it does it very well. I would call your attention to page 3, line 27, in which it says that the minor may maintain residency for a period not to exceed 30 days. I have a couple of comments about that section. In line 28, I would ask you to consider perhaps deleting the phrase "or is to be filed" in line 28. I think that's very ambiguous. The petition might not actually be filed for a number of weeks, and that phrase in the statute could essentially deny the child the right to continue in the services of a runaway shelter, and ultimately no petition may ever be filed. So I would urge your consideration of the deletion of that phrase. On page 4, again at the top of the page, starting on line 3, I would ask you to give careful consideration to including the phrase "with the written consent of the minor's legal custodian." And I'd like to hear some testimony, perhaps, or comments on that section from the people with Covenant House. My concern is not that I don't believe that parents should have the right to give the consent. My concern is that that phrase in the law might work to keep a child out of a facility like Covenant House, where they need the services that are there, they need the protection from the exploitation on the street. So again, I would just ask you to give some attention to that phrase and what its possible repercussions might be. Then starting on line 15 in Section B, I'm frankly puzzled by the phrase that starts at the end of line 16, is released from the program into the custody of a person other than the legal custodian or a person representing the legal custodian. If that phrase is meant to suggest that that if, for instance, Covenant House or the Youth and Parent Foundation shelter released a child to the department, that then the program should have to notify the parents, I agree. But I guess I'm puzzled as to who else these programs would be releasing this child to, you know, if it weren't to someone like the department. If it's meant, for instance, that there's a custody problem between two parents and the one parent may have given consent for the child to be in a shelter, and then the other parent comes along to try to take the child out of the shelter, if that's what that's trying to address, I found that just, I guess, rather puzzling. Then, just again, very quickly, I know there may be other people to testify, and I have other comments, but I won't take your time with them necessarily, would just be that in the definition section, I would urge you to add the word homeless minor so that the definition section also contains that.
Could we, Cutch, before you leave us, could you, Ed, are you still on the line?
Yes, I am.
Can you comment on Cutch's last remark about the releasing the child to a third party question?
Sure. I basically followed the draft that was provided to me that I understand was prepared by the attorney from Covenant House, which in turn was based on the New York State statute. There, the draft that they provided as to the release, there are actually two provisions in the bill which deal with releasing a child to someone other than the legal custodian. The one is, as the witness testified, is with regard to notice, and I simply followed pretty much their provision. Their provision says, where custody of the youth upon leaving the approved program is assumed by a relative or other person other than the parent or guardian, the staff of the program shall so notify the parent or guardian as soon as practicable after the release of the youth. This is my translation of that. Also, I should point out that on page 5, we've provided immunity for that very act for the program. And the immunity with regard to releasing the minor from the program is limited to those situations where the minor is released into the custody of a person and that person is someone other than the minor's legal custodian. Therefore, presumably, the immunity would not be available in a case where the minor is released into the custody of his parent or actual custodian. But that's getting into separate issues. By the way, I would add that I think all the comments that were made by this last witness are well taken, or at least are logical. And if you would like, at another time or privately or after this hearing, I could make myself available to address those questions as well.
Thank you, Ed. Is Greg Logan still on the line?
I sure am.
Greg, can you make a comment on the question we have about the release of the child into the custody of a third party?
Now, the reason for that provision is that because we're talking about crisis care and because these kids are sometimes not going to go home even after the 30-day period, it's crucial that programs be directed to keep parents informed about where the child, in fact, did go. And it's also crucial that programs not be concerned about trying to work out adequate alternative plans that do not automatically involve sending a young person home, because that is often not possible. So what's this? I think that subsection B is a reasonable translation of what the New York statute tries to do. It's a little bit shorter, and so it maybe takes some parsing to figure it out. I thought that the comments about the written consent for an additional 30-day period of shelter were very well taken. It may be in the New York statute there is a special provision that where a petition for abuse and neglect is being filed or is contemplated being filed, then there is reason, there may be reason for the program to hold on to a child. And that is usually the case where you cannot work something out with the family within 30 days and the child wants to stay with you. Often then you do have to suspect some kind of abuse or neglect, and it is possible then to provide some additional shelter to the young person. But what we find is that the shelter limits and the release of children at the end of the program has not really been an operating problem for programs. They're helpful guidelines to have, and they're very important in terms of getting insurance for programs.
time here. We have about just about 35 minutes remaining this morning. We have a number of other people to testify, so it's obvious that work will continue on this legislation. I didn't seek a motion to have the committee substitute before us because it's a draft that needs some more work with Senator Rohde's office and with members of the committee. So we'll continue this discussion. Anyone who wants to help us make it a better piece of legislation. So Pudge, did you have one more comment? And then we'll be taking Deborah Wing, or rather Peggy Stewart here in Anchorage, and then Deborah Wing in Fairbanks, and we'll continue with our list of people to testify. So please go ahead.
Representative Ellis, the last comment that I would want to make, and I was speaking briefly with Commissioner Munson about this before the hearing, is that the other major piece of services that are not available in the state are emancipation or pre-emancipation services. And while I think this legislation is important and needs to proceed and go on and get enacted, I would ask the committee's consideration of introduction of a companion bill which would address the delivery and the provision of pre-emancipation services. Much of the work of that was done by our social work student in your office last year, Representative Allison, so I'm sure that much of her work is still available in your files, because I see that as an important companion piece of legislation to this one. So that.
Thank you for your suggestions. Peggy, could you join us, please? And is Deborah Wing available in Fairbanks? Are you there, Deborah?
Yes.
Okay, please stand by.
Thank you, Representative Ellis, members of the committee. My name is Peggy Stewart. I am the group coordinator for a local Tuklif group here in Anchorage. I'm also the parent of a 14-year-old daughter who has been a runaway, been involved with drugs and alcohol, and also school problems. I'm very pleased about the legislation in Senate Bill 79. I think it's desperately needed legislation for parents to be able to work with their children. I have some concerns about the committee substitute. I think one of the most important parts of the legislation is giving back to the parents some ability and some say in what happens with their child when they're picked up as a runaway. In our personal case, my daughter was developing a habit of becoming a runaway. Her final time that she ran away was last April. At that point in time, we were part of the Tough Love group. We brought several different resources to bear, but one of the most important things that we did is we got some intervention, and we did that actually against the current laws of the state of Alaska. We had our daughter picked up, we located her when she ran. Members of the Tough Love group, other people that we knew, picked her up. We had her placed in a group home in Palmer. This home was in the process of trying to get licensed through the state, a licensing which they were eventually unable to do. So eventually we had to remove our daughter from the home. Fortunately, she was there for 2.5 months. Initially, it was a place that she willingly went to, but then as any honeymoon period, when you've placed your child into a program or another place, when she started having to abide by the rules, was also after she had gotten no longer involved with drugs, she's got clean from drugs, was completely separated from peers and people that were influencing her in her drug use. This kind of an intervention we felt was very important. It was not something that she would willingly have done. At the same point in time, we were doing family counseling. My daughter was being brought in on a weekly basis to do individual counseling. We worked out a whole family type of environment for her. She did then come home in August. She is currently repeating the eighth grade. She's doing well. We have a very prospering, thriving 14-year-old daughter at this point in time. I very, very strongly believe that if we had operated within the system as it exists now and within the current laws of the state as they exist, we would still be fighting the runaway problem and we would still be fighting the drug and alcohol abuse. The fact that we intervened that we got her out of the situation that she was in, a protective, it was not only the protective environment, and as the commissioner alluded, certainly it gives parents who are having problems with their children a sense of safety that your child is off the street and she's in a safe environment. That is a very minor step in my mind. It's then getting the appropriate resources and treatment to our children. And if we are only leaving that up on a voluntary basis that our children have to agree to either go to drug abuse or alcohol abuse counseling, they have to agree to go to this particular runaway shelter or this particular program, and we do not have the ability through the court system, through DFYS, to be able to have them placed in the most appropriate setting for them and then be able to work within that setting, that we are going to lose the battle more often than we're going to win it. I also agree with very strongly with the testimony that was given earlier by Pudge that too often our children have also committed crimes. Certainly a 14-year-old using drug and alcohol is a crime. But trying to get some intervention in that, we have had reports within our Tough Love group of people who have actually called the police and had them come to their home, and there is their child with drug paraphernalia in the home, clearly stoned or whatever, and the police say that they can do nothing about that. And then the parents are left standing there with, how do I get my child to go into and get the kind of help that they need when they have to do it on a voluntary basis? And certainly a child in that situation is not going to do that. So I feel very strongly that we need the kind of legislation provided in Senate Bill 79, but we need some teeth to it that give the parents the capability to work with the system in order to get the most appropriate types of help for their children. And that's the bulk of my testimony.
Are there any comments or questions from committee members? Representative Coker.
The comment, I think, flowed from the testimony that we've had about the, and in fact we had before we even passed President Phillips' legislation, is the reluctance of the police to proceed against minors, even when they're clearly breaking the law. I guess now Anchorage has one juvenile officer. A larger police department may have a juvenile department or juvenile officers. This is a general problem going beyond it, and we have the same problem with the reluctance of prosecutors to proceed on drunk drivers, for example, prior to about 5 years ago. And there are many cases that don't proceed to prosecution. Both the police and the DA's office have total discretion. There's no law we can pass to say they've got to go X number of arrests. Perhaps this is a matter of staffing or review or oversight or administration, or perhaps it may also in part stem from the way that the community or the state sees its priorities and where we put our money from time to time. We do need more juvenile officers. I'm sure the one now is doing a much better job according to Judy, but before that there was nobody.
You know, we are talking about a complex web of problems, and I'm wondering if the group that you're involved with was able to determine if either of the recent mayoral candidates, I guess there's only Mayor-elect Fink worth talking about at this point, did he have a position on funding, increases in funding for local police efforts? Or, you know, it's a lot of this, you know, I'm confident that the laws were going to be changed at the state level, and we're trying to work out a reasonable approach here. But as you mentioned, a great deal of this, the legislature is never going to have all that much influence with the Anchorage Police Department and where they put their resources. The extent to which we're involved in that is how much municipal revenue sharing we provide to the local government. But to a very large extent, a lot of what we've discussed this morning has to do with the Anchorage School District, the Anchorage Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that, at least I've heard from Judy Rich and others, that the group locally does try and have communication with those two local entities, but just highlight that that's a large part of what we're up against here.
That's, you know, I think the communication certainly between with the police and the police department, how they place their priorities for their resources is a part of it. There's one thing, though, with regard to the original Senate Bill 79, which is being deleted, which is the ability to temporarily detain or temporarily hold a runaway. My personal opinion is that there's great validity to that kind of a temporary detention because it provides the time and the opportunity for an appropriate assessment to be made so that resources can be brought to bear. If you take out the ability to do that kind of a temporary detention and children are then placed in either back in the home or in the